where the wind comes sweeping down the plain. And the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain.
All right, so we did not get a chance to record with Kim this week, but I did have quite a good Facebook conversation with her, and she said she loved how everybody stayed upbeat and positive for the most part. Her favorite question of the night was the name the success and failure you had your first year. She said she thought it was really important for new teachers to realize that we all make mistakes and recover from it and keep going.
Oh, for sure.
And so I was really excited about getting to speak with her, at least through the Facebook, even though we couldn't connect for this. So this is Okla Said.
Hey, that is correct. It is Okla Said. And you know what? Speaking through Facebook solves the exact same purpose as it
It does.
Provides
but you don't
insight.
Get to hear her peppy voice.
She is pretty peppy, and she can also be a bulldog on certain issues as well.
I believe so.
But she's also quite a unicorn and rainbows sort of lady, which I love.
Which we didn't say who she was, did we?
Oh, my goodness.
We're talking about Kim Blodgett here, who is at Kim Blodgett. She hosted the Sunday night Twitter chat, which was all about, I graduated with a degree in education. Now what?
That is an excellent question. Now what, indeed, as I would hope, if you graduate with a degree in education, you are going to be going into teaching education-ish?
I hope so. did you know, and I think maybe we spoke about this one other time, according to Robin Miller, who is at the State Department, she said that there are, man, I don't want to get this wrong.
Don't get it wrong.
But I might. 3,500 or 35,000, which is a huge difference, Mr. Math Person. Mm-hmm. Please don't get on to me. The number is insane. How's that?
Okay.
Of people who have current teaching certificates and are not using them. And they renew them, but don't use them.
Pretty indicative of the times we're living in, I believe.
I think so, too. Well, what do you say? You want to dive into this chat?
Please do. Take us into question one.
Question one is, what was one thing you wish someone would have told you that you didn't learn in college?
That is a really good question. I kind of sort of wished, I can't remember exactly what I tweeted here, but sometimes real life is just different than college life. It's just not
yeah.
the same. And now I have all those kiddos that whose future now depends on me, and I can't defer back to my cooperating mentoring teacher.
Are you going to be real with them and tell them the real life things, or are you going to, you know, make them follow the script and go about it?
Oh gosh, I've had student teachers twice, and both times we were like, let's do as much as we can with you so that you can see some normal real life teaching things.
Heck yes. I felt like I was thrown to the wolves, essentially, because the gal that I did my student teaching with, she was the exact same way. She's like, all right, here we go. We're diving in, and we're diving in hard.
I had a pretty good mentoring teachers, and they didn't necessarily toss me to the wolves, but they made sure I was ready, and then they supported me, and they had the expectation that I do contribute just as they do in the classroom. So that was really good.
One of the tweets that rang true from me, for me, was from Jen Williams, and she is at Jen Will Teach. Her question to her answer to this was, if you're not a hugger, get over it. Sometimes even the students who are bigger than you need a hug. And so I am not a hugger. I have learned to become a hugger, and I don't like to hug adults. Children are my only exceptions, but as a teacher, I am quite the hugger now.
I know Jen a little. I don't feel that she is a hugger either.
Yeah, she doesn't come across as a hugger, but I think that she too must have been in the same situation.
Maybe so. I really like what Chris Paradise had to say, and she is at Chris Paradise, that coding in COBOL was not very useful. Or that I really would see stem and leaf plots again? ? Okla Ed. #AltCert. So
AltCert.
Yeah.
Good.
So
that's funny.
And I know we've got some alternately certified educators in Oklahoma who are bang sauce amazing.
True, but you know what prepared them for this job now? You know,
yeah.
Other than being thrown to the wolves, I could imagine.
Right. Question two: what is one reason you could offer on why a first-year teacher should stay in Oklahoma? And I have to be honest. My answer to this question was a smiley face because Kim asked for us to keep it positive.
Right.
Truth be told, that is a tough sell, right? And it's like trying to sell a freezer or ice water to somebody that lives in the frozen tundra. I mean, that is a difficult thing to do at this point in time.
You know, I liked Brandy Williams, and she is at Science Brandy. Her tweet on this kind of rings true to me. I've been trying to train my brain and change my mindset on this since I sit on that teacher shortage task force on how we have to stay positive and how we have to sell this to our teachers. She said the support. In no other state does everyone in education know everyone else. And I feel like that is one thing that this Okla Ed group has done so well, has connected us. And I feel like we have so much support under that hashtag that's one thing I would tell a first year teacher. Yeah, things look dire in some places, but there's this. And like, I love my Okla Ed people. And I think that's one thing that you could tell a first-year teacher: stay here because of all this support.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Okla Ed's been pretty full of blessings for me too, as in we're having this conversation right now because of it. So
exactly.
I think also it would be remiss to not talk about the super busy, very active Facebook groups that have been established as well with the math, science, and social studies and language.
Yeah, what was Levi's, he posted something about the number of educators. Do you remember the number?
10,000, I think.
10,000 educators have come together under those four groups, and that's amazing.
Super amazing. I like what my good friend, Dr. Toby Brown, had to say. He is at TBBRWN, no vowels in that one. He said, A2, I'd quote Obi-Wan, "You must do what you feel is right, of course." I'd probably tell him to leave. Come back when, if we fix the budget.
Yeah.
When and if. I don't know. Every day.
But you've got a lot of support.
Indeed, because you have to have it or you would just go bonkers.
Or would there be nothing else? All right, question three. We all know interviews are stressful. What are some of the best job interview tips you can offer? And there were really great tips across the board on this one. Things like know your strengths, know your weaknesses. These are go-to questions. But I'll be honest, Blue Cereal had a great response to this one. He says, I mean, come on. They probably need you way more than you need them. Do whatever the hell you want in the interview. And I replied back to him, it's definitely the teacher's market this day. I mean, when we talk about housing, there's a buyer's market, a seller's market.
Right.
It's definitely the teacher's market these days.
Except that we don't really have very much negotiating power. We just get to take the job or not.
But you can go to Deer Creek, or you can go to Norman, or you can go to Edmond, because every one of them needs probably your position, whatever you teach.
Yeah, for sure. I like what Andre Dottie had to say here at Andre Dottie. He said, be yourself. There's plenty of teacher positions open. You'll get a job. Don't be fake trying to impress someone. And that's really important. And I think the one thing to consider too that I shared was that you need to be interviewing your prospective administrator. And it's the whole, if you get a bad vibe, get out. I mean, flee. There's no need to, if you're picking up a weird vibe, there's no need to hang in there.
I mean, and doing a little research before you go into the interview, what is that school about? What kind of Facebook presence do they have? Mm-hmm. What kind of Twitter presence do they have? I mean, you can get a lot of the culture of the school through those two avenues, before you walk into that interview. Know the culture of the school before you walk in.
Or know the leadership. We have several superintendents who are active on social media, and based on their interactions there, I know who I really, really, really want to work for in those situations, as opposed to someone that I don't see on very often.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Rick Copps, hire me if I ever lose my job. Just kidding, but I'm not. But moving on.
Okay, what is one success and one failure you remember from your first year of teaching? Now, I have to tell a story here. First year of teaching is quite difficult, right, for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
And so my first few years of teaching, you know, I wanted my kids in nice, neat rows, pencils at the ready, quietly working and not bothering me with their questions, just do what I asked them to do. And at one point I'd fussed at them about, I can't remember, making too much noise or some weird thing. And so what they did was they staged a silent sit-down protest. I go, what are the rules for this protest? They go, we will not speak. We will do exactly what you ask us to do, but we're moving all of our door desks over in front of the door. I go, okay, you said you're gonna do your work? And they, yes, Mr. Hazel, we're going to do our work. And you're going to remain silent? Yes, Mr. Hazel, we're going to remain silent. And we all agree on this. I'll let you move your desks. Yes, we can do that. And those little rats moved 25 desks over in front of the door, and then for 2 weeks... they came in, sat down, were super silent, did whatever the homework was. It was the most amazing thing. Yeah, it was crazy. And they hung up little signs, you know, we are protesting Mr. Hazelwood. And I was cool with that. But guess what? They were learning.
That is pretty fun. So my first year teaching, I was well outside of my certification area. You know, you spend that year, that semester student teaching, and you get really, you know, you feel like you get good at your craft. And then whenever I was put into a pre-K, kindergarten, first grade classroom, the kids coming to me in that student teaching area knew how to read. And right. I was ready for kids who knew how to read. I was not ready to teach reading. And so I did all this research before school began. You need word walls, you need this, you need that. And so we're going through ah, right? The sound ah. And we've got ah, and everybody's got ah. Okay, we say it ah. And then we move on to at and see how phonics goes. We've got at. We just said a word and we know these sounds. And then we added the C in front of at, and we've got k, at. Yes, here we go. We're moving. We've got this under control. And then we go to k, a, er. And I was like, that's how they say it in Boston, and I'm going to find out why we say it different here. And I come home and I do all this research, and that's its own sound. And so that was one of my like big, I will never forget being like in the moment with those kiddos and thinking, I've got more work to do.
always learning, super important.
Always learning. Waters English to H2O, she said, I spend too much energy on teaching English and not enough on teaching kids. I spend more time getting to know them through their writing. And gosh, like, yeah, I can imagine as a first year teacher, you are just trying to do your work and make sure that they are doing theirs. And through their writing, if that's the only place you're learning about them, I would say that is probably a big failure. And I'm sure she's changed things over the years. Mm-hmm. So,
based on what she has to say, I think she has. I think we've all learned from those first years. If I were to go back and revisit my old self, I'd be like, oh my gosh, let's let the kids learn. Quit being so controlling. Because
right.
by the end, it was just organized chaos, which may or may not have been a problem in itself. I like what Adam Howard had to say. He is at ECHS Howard. And he said, the success, I did not let the realization that I had no idea what I was doing defeat me. I used it to feed my determination. And I thought that was great because that's where a lot of us are sometimes, even from day to day. Like, I don't know how this is going to work, but I'm gonna do it.
Yeah. What's one of the biggest struggles, question five here, in education? One of the biggest struggles is classroom management. What are some strategies that maybe have worked for you?
Oh gosh, I think classroom management is something that you have to just talk about all the time or think on all the time. But I also think that my tweet to this was, you have to step into the student's rhythm because there's more of them than there are of you. And so it's just easier, I found it easier for me, especially as I became a wiser teacher, to just step into whatever that rhythm was. If the kids were sleepy and quiet and needed a less intense learning situation because of the nature of the beast, that's what I did. If they came in from lunch high on Dr. Pepper and Cheetos and needed activity, that's what we did. And it just got easier for me to do it that way. One of the things
that's great.
Yeah, but it takes time to learn all that, right?
Sure.
But I loved what Shelby, who is at ShelbyJR3, said. And when you are reading this on the show notes, actually click into this whole entire conversation because it is hilarious. But all starts with evil eye.
I thought that Mean Mrs. H, and she is at OK Joan, had it good with keep things simple, be organized, and practice the procedures over and over. And not to beat them over the head with it, but I feel like I think children need consistency.
For sure.
And if you keep it simple, they'll remember it, and then practice,
right,
they will get it into their brain. And I thought that was a really good piece of advice. I think Harry Wong would probably agree with her. But then I also really liked, it didn't really answer a specific practice, but a good piece of advice came from at Graydon Naper. He said, don't promise more than you can deliver. And that is so true. I mean, you can, if you tell the kids you're going to do this, you better deliver on that. If you tell the parents you're going to do this, you need to deliver. And I know that was a mistake of mine in the first couple of years, is I overpromised and underdelivered just because my ideas were grander than what I was actually able to put into action. And so I learned from that just to be busier, because I didn't want my ideas to go by the wayside.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I learned how to deliver on my grand ideas.
Yeah, I think that's super important, that you just can't, if you do that again, I'm going to snip off a finger. All right, I'm giving you one more chance, and then the finger's gone. Okay, I'm going to have to, if you do that again, I'm going to have to call your parents, and then, but at some point, you got to, all right, we got to do it.
You got to be actionable.
Yeah. Question 6. It's no secret that Oklahoma teachers are the lowest paid. What advice can you offer on how to make ends meet for new teachers? This is a hard question, because it's important that we be able to have a comfortable life, not extravagant, but be able to pay our bills and get married and have kids if we want, without having to stress out about going into debt over all that. I'm not saying that we need to drive Mercedes-Benz and Harley Davidsons or whatever else. I mean, if you save for it, do it. But holy smokes, it's just super hard. It's challenging.
I would agree with that, but and then I've also lived very poor in life. I mean, I have been dirt broke. And I think that we get this idea of what we need to do and where we need to be. And I think sometimes we strive to do that a little too early. And I'm not trying to knock teachers here at all.
Right.
I do think we are underpaid. But I also think that there's a thing of living within means.
For sure.
And don't expect to have the 10 acres with the waterfalls and everything when you're, you know, first or second year teacher. I mean, and newly married. I mean, there are things that people work for in life to get to where they are. And like one of those realizations happened when, you know, I'm at my dad's and my stepmom's house, and they've got this acreage, and it looks over this beautiful view. And I just think, gosh, why don't I have this yet? And it's because, I'm new at all of this. And
right.
So I think we can't rush into the American dream. I think we have to work for it. But I do also think there need to be some things happening to get teachers to where they can live that American dream within, the 20-year time frame. As it sits right now, it is very difficult to be able to do many things. So, I mean, and if you've got kids that want to be in sports or band or cheerleading or anything, you are really trying to scrape things together to make sure that they can do the things and live the lives that they also want to live. So,
yeah,
it's a double-edged sword here on this lowest paid thing.
No, I agree. You know, one of the arguments I heard at one point in time was that, you know, our parents worked so hard to purchase a house or do this or do that, and it took them years and years of saving and being intelligent with their money and planning.
Yes.
And we're trying to do all that in year 2, 3, or 4 of our career, and we're trying to top our parents on something that took them much longer to do. And I thought that was an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah. I really, though, loved what Megan Lloyd had to say here. And she is at Megan Lloyd, and she just is so funny. And I can't wait to meet up with her to talk about next week's chat. But she said, "The only reason I do online dating, it's not for marriage. It's not to find marriage. It's because I'm a teacher and I want a nice meal."
Oh, that's so terrible.
I know.
On several different levels. And so hilarious because, I mean, that's a good way to get a meal. There were several tweets that came up here about if you want to teach in Oklahoma, you should marry somebody that isn't a teacher so that you have some source of income in your house. My wife is an RN. She has always made more than me. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's an issue just in our marriage. But there was a whole thread about marrying and being a teacher and marrying somebody that isn't a teacher that makes more money. And I've seen our own not all, I don't want to be general, but some of our political policy people have also said, if you want to teach, you need to marry somebody rich.
Sure.
And so we've got to change that. We've got to change that view. And I thought Jennifer Williams, who's at Jen Will Teach, had a great response to this, to all of this. She said, "No teacher should have to sacrifice a personal life to teach. Also, marry for money? This ignores the root of the problem." And I agree with that. When we said we wanted to be teachers, we never took a vow of poverty. We never took that
right.
vow of poverty. And
right.
yet we're often treated that way by some of our policy creators.
No, and Ann Beck and I, we had a conversation as well earlier this week, because she's like, you know, I was a middle school teacher and my husband is a teacher. And she's like, you know, I was on the student council. I was doing cheerleading coaching. He's a coach for basketball and football at one point. And you get stipends for these extra little jobs. And sometimes you feel like you've got to take those extra jobs so that you can
right.
do a little bit more. And gosh, you know, with a coaching position, you're not just a teacher. You have before school practices some days. You have after school. You know, leave for the evening on the bus. And then if you've got kids in the mix, like, okay, now I've got all my after school duties. I've got cheerleading practice. I've got, you know, to take care of three kids, get them to their activities. I mean,
right.
I think there's more than money that goes into two teachers that are married together, especially when you have kids as well. I mean, there are just so many more things that you have to think about or give up if you are both going to be teachers. And I wish it wasn't that way.
Yeah, me too. It's tough.
So question 7, we all know working with parents can be challenging. Share a success and a failure that you've experienced when communicating with a parent. And Andre Dotti has one of the funniest tweets on there. Is this little black girl, and her hair is a mess. And the mama, you know, had posted on Facebook or Twitter herself. She's like, this is all a screenshot. It's like, "I sent my kid to school with the beautiful afro, and this is what she comes home looking like." And it just reminded me of my first year. Again, one of these little girls came up to me and she was like, "Can you braid my hair?" And I was like, "Yes, I'd love to braid your hair." And I realized quickly I had no idea how to do black girl hair. And so that picture and that tweet that he put up there was this, I mean, instant reminder of what my first year challenge was.
And
I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, I didn't know if I was supposed to laugh at that or be horrified that obviously her teacher had no idea at all how to. I didn't know if I should be horrified and appalled. Or laugh that it was. I mean, I had a conflicted emotions about that.
I know.
Yeesh.
I do know. Yeah. But Angela Little, she is, you know, one of our Okla Ed parents that participates in these chats regularly. She said many parents would like to be told how to work with their kids at home on certain things. We want to help, but we aren't sure how. And I think that is a failure if you've got parents that want to help and you're not doing well at communicating with that.
Yeah, and this is where the flipped classroom evangelist part of me steps in and goes, "Listen, teachers, it'll take you less than 5 minutes to make just a short mini lesson, and it's not for your students, it's for your parents, and they
Man
can
alive,
see exactly what you're doing." You know, like my daughter came home with like, okay, I taught high school calculus for years and years and years and years. Pre-AP, pre-calc. I taught all the maths, okay, except for statistics. Fluid with my math understanding. But my third grade daughter brought home this worksheet, and I took a picture and tweeted to Oakland. I'm like, hello, I'm stuck.
Yeah.
And if her teacher had just done even 2 minutes, hey, here's how we handle these problems, I could have helped my own kid out.
You know where I struggle there, especially in the math department, is when they want to find other ways to make the answer work.
Right.
Like you've got 37 plus 62 and taking the 2 from this and throwing it over here. And I'm like, man, alive, that took more work for me than just doing the math problem. And I know that it helps coming up with, you know, even numbers to be able to add such. And I know that that's a strategy, but holy mess. I mean, we were on Khan Academy working that, and I did not get 5 in a row correct immediately.
Yeah.
I had to fail quite a few times on that one.
We all learn differently, and as teachers, we need to let our kids learn differently, too. That's not bad.
Yeah.
I liked what Amy Garrett, who is at AmyGarrett5, she said, failure, not calling 1 on 1 0. They were strict and hammered me. Student stated he understood and he still had a B. And there's that reality that some of our parents are just these grade hawks that nothing less than 100% will do. And then that calls into question the whole how we grade kids situation. Like, what are we grading, you know?
Right.
And in Oklahoma, we have the whole valedictorian scholarship situation. And at Edmund Memorial, we would have like 50 or 75 valedictorians. And I'm not trying to knock those students, they're brilliant. But some of those students who were valedictorians were straight A students who took AP courses every semester, and they're also being included together with straight A students who didn't. And,
right.
And there's a difference between a regular course and an AP course, and there's a difference.
Or a college course.
Right. And, or taking risk. Taking risk because you want to learn, not because you're afraid you're going to get a B on an assignment. I mean, this whole grade situation, sometimes we really, really overdo it.
No, and I've heard instances, teachers share stories. A teacher shared a story with me about how she was approached by a parent and said, man, is there any way we can change this grade? Because if my kid had just gotten this GPA, we would have gotten $10,000 more in scholarships. And I'm thinking, but your kid wasn't that GPA type student.
Right.
I mean, we didn't get that GPA type work from them, you know? And so, sheesh, you know, changing grades, that's a big ask.
Yeah, grades are tough, and sometimes we have people do it to help a kid out, and I don't know. I get grumpy on that. I had the same expectation of all of my students. Like, you want the grade, you gotta earn it. I wonder if there's a better way.
Sure.
So question 8, let's face it, we've never done a lesson plan like we did in college. Describe a typical lesson plan or strategy you use to do your lesson plans. So for me personally, I wrote these really detailed lesson plans, you know, first on my teaching career, but then it got to the point where I was like, section 5, page 2, problems,
right.
3 through 17, odd. And that was my lesson plan.
Yeah.
But then when I started teaching some things in college, some different things that I just wasn't familiar with, you know, because I hadn't taught it before, I used OneNote a lot to help organize myself. And one of the things that I really liked using was Gagne's 8 events of instruction.
Okay.
And I didn't tweet that because I didn't think of it at the time, but it was a great way to make sure that I had a good, vibrant, engaging lesson. And the lesson plan for that was a bit more involved than the simple
page 2.
But it worked out really well. Worked out really well.
Now, I saw several tweets here, which made me laugh a little bit. And maybe they were that long, but I saw people were like, I've never done a 26-page lesson plan after college. I'm like, 26 pages? Are you remembering wrong? Or were you really that detailed in those? I mean, I did have some that were like 3 and 4 pages long after you finish everything. But I don't remember 26 pages. However, I liked the format, and I think Laura Searcy said it pretty well, and she's at Mrs. Searcy 112. She said, agreed, I tell my PSTs, and
pre-service teacher.
Pre-service teachers, thank you. That this is non-real-world artifact, but the depth gets you to learn how to reflect on all the areas needed. And I think that that's true. I think we do those in college that way because we're new guys, and right. We need to know how to think, and we need to know how to scaffold, and we need to know how to reflect and rebuild a lesson plan. And I think that there's a purpose for the 26 or 3-page lesson plans, but then we do abbreviate. I mean, I did after college, I still had about a page worth of lesson plans because I wanted to remind myself, what's my hook here? Right. I wanted to remind myself, what's the plan here? What am I trying to teach? And if you don't put thought into those, then what are you going to turn out at the end of the day? And I mean, now that I'm 6 years evolved, which is still pretty green in things, it's nowhere near the full page, but I'm still a half a page planner.
Right. I mean, there's just things you got to remind yourself that you need. I mean, you don't want to leave anything out or leave it to chance. So you've got to make a note of it.
Right.
And the 26-page lesson plan went to Shirlene MT. And she is
Oh, there it is. Oh, my goodness.
She's at Shirlene MT, and she said, I can't actually imagine doing the 26-page lesson plan I created every week. Lesson planning would be my second job. Let me tell you, I would have created one of those, and then just, no, we're changing majors.
Yeah, yeah, 26 pages. Who is this guy?
It's really long.
So question 9, in college, they teach you how to educate the mind, but not so much the heart. Share something that's worked in your classroom to teach empathy or social emotional learning.
That's a good thing. I think sometimes in college we get hung up on theory. I shouldn't say hung up, that sounds terrible, but theory becomes important, and rightfully so. But it's hard to effectively teach everything we need to know going into that first year of our classroom in a college program. There's just not enough time.
So I had a really great teacher in my classroom management class, Professor Peggy Lisenby, NSU, and I'm pretty sure she's at TU right now, and actually maybe transitioning to TCU. But she was really amazing. She let us go off script, and we would be in there sharing our stories from things that had happened in these, you know, several different internship experiences. And she would let us switch to how you deal with the kids who didn't get to eat and how you deal with, you know, a lot of these other issues that just pop up that aren't a part of any theory class. And right. So I do feel like we got to, explore that area a little bit beforehand. Andre Dotti said, I've got many, but I'll share this. Please learn every student's story. If you observe children, they will teach you how to teach them. And I thought that was pretty darn good. I mean, you've got to have tough love. You've got to have cushiony love. You've got to be hard. You've got to be soft. And it just depends on which kid. I don't think you can be hard on every single kid every single way, or you're going to have tears and misunderstandings.
Oh, for sure. And pretty much I like what Andre has to share in general anyway. He's really good and very thoughtful. I really like what Steve Pyle had to say, and he is at Sulfur Middle. He said, listen to them, for goodness sakes, never turn down a hug. So there we are, back to hugs again.
Back to hugging. Well, and then Natalie Johnson, too. She is at OK Natalie J. Hitting the pause button to help students work through things. It might not be in the plan for the day, but students need teachers willing to help and maybe even hug.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, all of these things are very true. Kids do not, their stories do not fit neatly into your lesson plans, and being able to go off script to help is definitely something teachers need to know going into the job.
Yeah, indeed. Sometimes your lesson's going to take a U-turn, but it needs to happen, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Question 10, what is one way you wish your administrator would have helped you your first year of teaching, or one way your admin did help you? and there were some really good conversations here. I got stuck with a pretty terrible mentor, in all honesty, but the support cast I had around me, my unofficial mentors, as it were always available, always supportive, always shared ideas. I cannot complain about my experiences my first year outside of that. That was a bigger growth for me just in general as a teacher.
Yeah, that's awesome. I know, and so my student teaching mentor, she got me involved. And so Amy Garrett, who is at Amy Garrett 5, said my admin helped me get involved with review committees and such. He valued my want to. And I would say that was the same of my mentor teacher. She sat on a textbook review committee and took me into those meetings and let me see what that was all about and be involved in some of those things. That's part of what got me fired up in education in the first place. I remember sitting there, not going to name the school or anything, but they were talking about whether to adopt a new textbook for fifth grade social studies, and they were going with it. And I thought, crap, in my semester, we haven't had much time to even teach social studies. And we definitely didn't crack open a textbook. What are we going to do with these textbooks that we have to, you know, that we're buying? And she said, well, if we don't use that money, then we lose it. And that was, you know, back in the day. But I was just like, oh, my word, we're spending how much money on these textbooks? And that's like three teachers.
Right.
You know, that definitely was one of the first eye-opening education experiences that she got me involved with. And then she and I talked through some of those things and went back and forth on it. And I felt like getting involved immediately will help you grow as not only a teacher, but as a well-rounded educator.
Oh, for sure. I agree with that 100%. I really liked what Katie Kinder had to say. She is at Katie Kinder 1. She said, my administrator gave me an amazing mentor my first year. A strong teacher that I'm still extremely close to with. And this is what hashtag PCS rocks does for T's. I thought that was awesome that she still has such strong connections with her mentor teacher. Yeah. I have no idea where my mentor teacher is right now.
I don't either anymore, and that's sad.
And I didn't really want to know. I don't know.
Well, yeah, you wouldn't.
We didn't have that kind of bond, and that's okay. I turned out fine.
Yeah. So on the topic of mentor teachers, question 11 is, most schools don't assign teachers a mentor. What are some ways you mentor new teachers? And so that's one thing Epic does, I feel, really well. And every brand new teacher gets, we have a position called the Director of Teacher Development, and there's several of them. Every brand new teacher gets a DTD for the year to kind of walk with them, hold their hand, check in, you know, regularly. And so we do a first year teacher mentorship program.
Awesome.
And I think that that's very valuable for new teachers coming in. I mean, you've got to have somebody to bounce ideas off of. I remember as a first year teacher, I wanted to look like I had it all under control. And I think teachers get in that, you know, they want to have everything under control. They don't want to look like they're failing. And so you tend to put yourself on an island, and finding a mentor who can help you through and get off that island or bridge that island, is very valuable.
Yeah, indeed. At Craig McVeigh, who is McVeigh 51, he said, we still assign and pay a small stipend to mentors for new teachers. We also have a year-long orientation program. It helps a bit. I think that's important that there is some sort of program in place to help new teachers. It is a different world from student teaching, and there's a lot going on. Like, hey, what's the code to the copy machine sort of situation? You know, things they don't tell you.
Yeah. No, and you know what? He is really trying to do some things in his district. They're working on things, just trying to think outside of the box with their budget on how to support first year teachers in amazing ways. And
true story.
I appreciate the thinking that goes into what he's trying to do out there.
Right, I do too. It's great.
Yeah. Okay. Question 12. Sorry.
Did you read at Jason Banks?
Oh, no. Jason, I did not mean to leave you out. I did like his answer, and he had a great one that I almost skipped. He's always available for questions, but he likes to ask pointed questions, not just questions that are going to result in fine.
Yeah.
You know, and I think a great administrator has to learn how to dig deeper and get those the real answer so that fine doesn't end in the teacher quitting at the end of the school year.
Yeah, indeed. How are you doing today, Aaron?
Fine.
Okay, good deal.
How about you, Scott?
I'm fine.
Moving on.
Question 12. Post your favorite education quote. Tell what it means to you. I don't know what Kim was thinking putting 12 questions into 1 hour. Holy crap.
I know. That's a lot.
What are you thinking?
She didn't think that we were going to, be so voiced in this discussion.
But she had a bunch of great ones in there. I liked Kelly Jo Myers, who is at Kelly Jo 5KM. She said, the task of the modern educator is not to cut down jungles, but to irrigate deserts, from C.S. Lewis. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, he's really good. So I don't know if Rick Cobb was actually quoted somebody or if this is a Rick Cobb quote. Either way, I liked it. You have to love kids more than you love rules. And I love rules because without them, there's chaos. But sometimes the teachable moments fall outside of the rules.
Right, right.
And then I have a sign on, a signature on my emails that go out, and I love this quote, and I still love this quote. I think, man, should I change this quote? But it's the duty of a citizen in a free country not to fit into society, but to make society. And that's John Holt. He's big in the homeschool movement. He's big in the unschool movement. And so
the shame.
I'm so sorry, educators, but I think that even the most traditional brick and mortar teacher can see that and think, yeah, I am helping to create society here. If I don't do this, then we're gonna be everything we've always been.
No, right. I do like the quote because it is important that we don't necessarily fit in. I don't want to be around a bunch of other Scott Hazelwoods. We've talked about that before. It would drive me bonkers. Sure. I need the diversity, and I need everybody to be free thinking and making their contributions.
Yeah. What was your favorite question?
Gosh, I really liked question one. What is one thing you wish someone would have told you that you didn't learn in college? I think there's eight jillion things that you don't pick up in college until you have your own classroom. So that was a good
until
one.
You're just in it. Yeah. I liked question two. What's one reason you could offer a first year teacher to stay in Oklahoma? Just because I am trying to change my mindset, and I am trying to help with this recruiting, and I think we got to find a way to stay positive and find reasons, even for ourselves sometimes, why staying here is the best.
That's a tough one. I admire you for that passion.
Well, my Boomsoth tweet of the night, just so you know, goes along with that question.
Right.
Stay.
Go ahead.
So much passion and support within the Oklahoma Ed community. There is a purpose and direction, and legislators will eventually catch up.
And that came from at BioBell Rocks, Renee Bell.
Yes, thank you.
But will those legislators catch up in time?
I mean, that's the part I don't know. And I do feel like even if you cut that last piece off, that right there is a reason to stay. There's so much passion. There's purpose. There's direction. There's support. Our Oklahoma Ed community is amazing.
That's a true story there. I loved Blue Cereal. He had several tweets that I wanted to put into the podcast today, but I went with this one. And it's my Boom Sauce tweet of the night. Newbies.
Give it to me.
Newbies, go teach your little asses off. Figure out what works and what doesn't, and love as best you can every day. That's success.
That is so good.
It's pretty good.
I mean, that is so good.
It really is.
Boom.
Yeah, right? That's why I picked
it. Sorry. So, next week, what's going on?
Our good friend Megan Lloyd will be hosting, and she's going to do a chat that's centered around survive and thrive.
Yeah.
And for those of you that don't follow Megan on the Twitters, she is our rainbows and unicorns, although right now she's really fussy at the state legislature for not taking care of business.
Yes. Well, who isn't? Who isn't? And so that will be Sunday night at 8.
Hey, guess what?
What?
We have our chats every Sunday night at 8.
You're right. And you say that every time. But what if somebody's just now listening?
Well, if they're just now listening, then they'll know that this upcoming Sunday, no matter when you're listening to this podcast 8 years from now or not, on Sunday coming up, there will be an Oakla Ed chat.
Okay, and so that again goes back to how amazing Oakla Ed is. We have not missed a Sunday chat in 4 years.
Except for Christmas this year.
But it was a slow chat. We still did a chat. Slow chat.
Okay, you're right. It was a slow chat, but that was the only Sunday at 8 that we didn't have chat.
Sunday at 8, yes. Yeah. Okay.
Hey, so today I'm at Perk Place in Edmond, Oklahoma. Have you ever been to Perk Place?
Yeah.
So
no.
Okay, this is a cool little coffee shop. Here's why. And so I'm sorry for any background grindage noises, but what they do is if you'll come to Perk Place in Oklahoma, in Edmond, between 7 and 8 in the morning, they'll buy a coffee. The coffee is on the house. Okay?
Okay.
So, but then what they do is they take the purchase price of that coffee and they make a donation to a local charity.
Aww.
How cool is that?
Wow. And that's a busy time. That's that 7 to 8 hour. That's a busy time for somebody to go in and enjoy that.
So if you want to buy a coffee, like I tried to buy a coffee the other day and they're like, no. We buy the coffee and make a donation. And I go, oh, well, let me make a donation on my credit card. No. You can't do that. It's got to be cash only. I go, okay. Oh. So I'll take the coffee and bring cash next time. So there you go. 7 to 8. 7 to 8. And you can follow Perk Place on the Twitters. Ask me where.
Where would you follow them on the Twitters, Scott?
At Perk Place Cafe.
Mm.
Oh, at Perk Place Cafe. Okay. There you go.
Okay. Well, there you go. Guys, go out and follow at Perk Place OK on the Twitters and go in and get a cup of coffee and leave a donation.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
Educators,
you know what to do. Go out and dominate the world.
You know how many times Chuck Norris would dominate the world?
How many?
Twice.
Why?
Because who else is going to do it twice?
Awesome.
Hold on, Aaron, my son's calling. Jeez.
We're only saying hello. You're doing fine, Oklahoma, Oklahoma. Okay.